All right, we will call this committee hearing to order. Welcome, everyone. This is the Minnesota Senate Transportation Committee of Friday, March 24th, 2023. The time is 10 after 1 o'clock, and we are in room G23 of the Minnesota State Capitol. In accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following members will be participating remotely in today's hearing. Senator McEwen in Duluth, Minnesota, Senator Jasinski from St. Paul, Minnesota, Senator Coleman from Waconia, Minnesota, and Senator Morrison from Deep Haven, Minnesota. Welcome members and welcome to the public. We have 5 items on our agenda today, and with no further ado, we'll get going on Senator Kunesh's bill, Senate File 2250. I'll invite Senator Kunesh to the table. Mr. Greenfield, if you wouldn't mind my putting you on the spot, we have a fairly narrow element that brings us to Transportation Committee. Senator Kunesh, feel free to give some context about your bill, but I think there's a trunk highway that is actually damaged in any case, but would revert, and that's the matter that brings this to us today. And I think we have an amendment that we're going to entertain as well. Mr. Greenfield.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That is correct. There is a trunk highway piece that has brought this to the attention of the Transportation Committee, and that's part of the overall project slash discussion about the possible conveyance of these lands. So that's the matter before the Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. Senator Kunesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have for you the Senate File 2250. And this bill would require the Commissioner of Natural Resources to transfer state-owned land within the boundaries of Upper Sioux Agency State Park to the Upper Sioux community. And the reason that we are here in this committee right now is because of, as you mentioned, the Trunk Highway 67 that runs through that state park is in terrible disrepair. In fact, I believe there is a pretty serious sinkhole in there. And so this the amendment appropriates some money for those for the costs related to the property conveyance. So basically purchase property, property purchase appraisals, and road and bridge demolition and related engineering. And so that is my bill. This is a one-time appropriation.
Great. Thank you. Senator McEwen will move the A1 amendment. And members, that should be in your packets or otherwise in front of you. It appropriates $1.193 million for the purpose that Senator Kunesh just described. Any questions on the A1? All right, all those in favor say aye. Aye. The motion carries. All right. I see. I don't know if we need testimony from the agencies or not. I think we understand, unless members would like further explanation of the bill or the purposes for which it's in front of transportation. Do I hear a clamor for more testimony on this matter? Okay. With that, Senator Kunesh, I think we're sending you back to environment. All right. So, Senator Lang, welcome. Just to catch you up, we're just kind of coming to the conclusion of Senate File 2250. The matter that brings us before us is the matter of a trunk highway that needs to be conveyed back. It's a damaged highway. We're taking it from the general fund instead of the trunk highway. Questions?
Nope, I support the amendment.
All right, very good. Well, okay, amendment is on. All right, so Senator Port moves Senate File 2250 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Environment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. All right, thank you.
Thank you,
Senator Kunesh. All right, moving on to, Senator Champion, I know he's stretched a little thin.
Not back yet.
All right, so I will take the table and convey the gavel to Senator Hort.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Dibble will be moving Senate File 3087. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 3087. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment, if I may.
Senator Dibble moves the A2 amendment.
And members, we have Senator Kiskaden, Commissioner Kiskaden here. We'll call you up in a minute. But this has to do with a matter that she's working on in her part of the world. So we'll hear about that, but if we could put that on, and then we'll have a discussion of the totality of the bill.
Perfect. We'll move the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Dibble, to your bill as amended.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This would provide important funds, which would also serve as matching funds to federal funds for transportation management organizations, otherwise known as TMOs. We've had some discussion about those. We had the I-494 TMO conversation, and for those who were on the committee last year, we had the overall overview of TMOs and who they are and what they do. So we're quite familiar with them. They are a classic public-private partnership in which employers and other organizations work with the public sector to help with matters of mobility and access and transportation and help employers and communities solve a lot of mobility issues and access issues. They play, they work with community to educate employers, institutions, and commuters about transportation options, ensure that the business and community members know about and can take advantage of available resources to help relieve congestion, save time and money. They provide assistance, technical assistance to a variety of stakeholders, introduce new programs, just do a whole lot of really good work or provide some of that essential connectivity. So first we'll invite Sam Rockwell to the table to talk about the TMO that he manages. And Senator Kiskaden, if you want to come up and sit over here and talk about your initiative, that would be great.
Welcome to the table and to the committee. Mr. Rockwell, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Chair Port, Chair Dibble, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Sam Rockwell, and I'm the executive director of Move Minnesota, which is the DBA name for the St. Paul Transportation Management Association mentioned in the bill. Move Minnesota serves as the transportation management organization for the city of St. Paul. And in this role, it's our job to provide education, expertise, collaboration, and service of reducing congestion and improving air quality. This suite of activities is called transportation demand management. Our base funding for this work are federal CMAQ dollars, which are passed through Metro Transit and require a local match. We also receive some funding from the city of St. Paul. Transportation demand management plays an important role in our community, and at Move Minnesota, we focus on a couple areas. First, we work with the real estate development and property management communities to provide guidance and technical assistance on how new developments can support multimodal transportation options. Embracing these best practices in the community benefits the community at large by minimizing congestion and pollution on our streets, and benefits building owners and their tenants by providing ways to reduce transportation costs and development costs. We also provide technical assistance to the city of St. Paul, the CAP board right outside the door here, to improve walkability, bikeability, transit access, and Metro Transit on the development of policies and plans and ordinances related to transportation and planning, including recent development of the residential transit pass at Metro Transit. We also work with community to provide resources and education about transportation options directly. We attend community events to share information, provide hands-on opportunities to practice things like putting a bike on a bus rack. We attend local district council meetings to learn about specific community needs, lead bike rides, conduct regular surveys of commuters, and so forth. And finally, we work with other TMOs in the region, and we are thrilled to do that. Happy to be collaborating with Move Minneapolis on this bill. We developed a suite of TDM activities last year and created a transportation mobility summit, which Chair Dibble was able to attend. And we also are looking to build upon this regional collaboration with some support for reducing vehicle miles traveled across the region. We know from polling that Metro residents want to be able to do this. And we also know from some studies published last year that, quote, shared largely unconscious assumptions about how travel is and must continue to be primarily a car-based activity are exist in our community, and, quote, were customers aware, consumers aware of the true cost of automobiles, people would be more actively able to seek change in modes. So thank you very, very much for the chance to testify today, and happy to answer any questions now or later in the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell. Commissioner, would you please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sheila Kiskaden, and I'm an Olmsted County Commissioner and former colleague here, but I'm here today wearing the hat as a volunteer in my region for the Southeast Minnesota Together organization. This is an organization that came together about 8 years ago to ask ourselves, how do we work together as a region on our workforce issues? We're one of the two regions in the state that does not have a regional development commission of any sort. So trying to work together across jurisdictional boundaries is often very challenging. And for many years, we have said transit is one of our key issues. We have the cities of Austin, Albert Lea, Winona, Owatonna, Red Wing, Wabasha, I'll forget someone and offend someone, Rochester, but we have a lot of regional commuting for work. 2 weeks ago, I chaired the State Community Health Advisory Council, and we had a meeting with our Southeast Public Health directors. We asked them, what's the number one issue facing public health? We expected to hear something related to the pandemic, the need to transform public health. You know what three of the seven said? Transportation. How do we get people in rural areas to the services that they need? How do we get our elders? How do we get our disabled? Now, we do have transit providers in Southeast Minnesota, mostly through our community action agencies. And they have a certain level of collaboration that they try to do. But we need much more. We need inner city transit to get people to work and to school. We need on-call transit to get people to services. We need ride sharing. We have had a loss for many years. Mayo Clinic provided a subsidy for an inner city bus system that was run privately. During the pandemic, for a lot of reasons, they have eliminated that bus pass, so we no longer have those inner city buses. So we've worked with the Southeast Minnesota League of Municipalities, and we would like to very much to move into developing Minnesota's first rural transit management organization. We hired an engineering firm that did a scope of what it would take to do this process. It would be probably about a two-year process for us to do this, to form a governing board, to have a project coordinator, to really do the detailed work that it'll take to get this, the transit providers to the table, the employers to the table, users to the table, and plan together. So we are very optimistic and hopeful that you will fund this two-year study. We have met with MnDOT several times about this. We participated in the work on creating a regional transit coordinating council. We determined that wasn't going to meet our needs. It would do something, but not enough, and that we really need something that's a little more robust than what that would be able to provide. So we would be very grateful to have the opportunity to really thoroughly look at creating Minnesota's first regional transit management organization that would incidentally serve one of the growing areas of our state, third largest city, some of the largest private employers in the state, and we hope that we would have your support.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Commissioner. I also have Hannah Zinn on the list. Hannah, are you?
Thank you.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Zinn. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Hannah Zinn, and I'm the Public Policy Manager for the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 3087 on behalf of Move Minneapolis, a subsidiary of the Chamber. The Chamber thanks Senator Dibble for bringing this bill forward and providing us the opportunity to speak in support. Move Minneapolis is a 501c4 nonprofit and merged with the Chamber in 2019. This merger enabled Move Minneapolis to broaden its reach to serve chamber members. Move Minneapolis serves as the transportation management organization for downtown Minneapolis. It is one of several TMOs serving the MSP region. Along with other TMOs, Move Minneapolis aims to improve air quality and reduce congestion. Collaboration amongst the region's TMOs has been a growing focus in recent years. TMOs frequently share learnings and resources and promote each other's efforts to come together to advance shared goals. For example, Metro TMOs worked together to host a region-wide car-free MSP event in 2022. The success of this event has led Metro Transit and other TMOs to commit to collaborating on car-free MSP again in 2023. This collaboration is critical and invaluable to the success of all of our organizations. Move Minneapolis works with employers to consult on their commuter benefits and on-site facilities, and will host educational sessions with employees and will connect them to resources. They also provide one-on-one customized consultations with individual commuters. Some recent employers they have worked with include Dorsey and Whitney, Thrivent Financial, and Minneapolis College. Because of the unique characteristics and challenges and opportunities associated with downtown Minneapolis, Move Minneapolis will regularly work with other businesses, civic, and community organizations to foster the long-term recovery and vibrancy of the area. Move Minneapolis has a contract with the City of Minneapolis Public Works Department to promote and administer carpool registration program at the ABC Ramps Mobility Hub. Move also collaborates with city staff to promote the hub as a whole. Move works with employers to consult on their community. Oh, I already said that. So sorry. A main priority of Move Minneapolis includes focusing on providing educational opportunities and resources to raise awareness and empower organizations and individuals to advance sustainable transportation. As Sam mentioned, Move Minneapolis also receives federal funding through the Congressional Mitigation and Air Quality Grant. This federal funding is administered through the Met Council and is intended to support employer outreach to achieve travel demand management goals of reducing vehicle miles traveled to improve air quality and reduce congestion. The funding in this bill would help meet our local match requirements, but we are also seeking additional funds to support pilot hybrid commuter education programming. As we continue to recover from the pandemic, we and other TMOs and transportation service providers are grappling with how to fulfill our missions and equitably serve employers and commuters in a hybrid world where congestion and emissions are on the rise, but in new and evolving ways. The thought is that we could share and apply pilot learnings to be replicated at a regional and statewide level. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Zinn. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to testify to this bill? Any questions for the author? I don't have any. Senator Dibble, do you want to close us out? And then do you have a motion for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to present this bill and the suggestions it contains and the suggestion for devoting resources to the activities of TMOs as well as the exciting initiative coming from southeastern Minnesota. And I would like to, if you could please simply lay the bill on the table for further consideration in a future omnibus bill. I'd appreciate
that. Thank you, Chair Dibble. The bill is laid on the table.
As amended.
Or laid over.
As amended.
Yes, as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I'll do my final bill in order, so
okay.
I'll relinquish the
table. I see we have Senator Rest here. So I think we'll move to that one. Senator Rest, if you want to present 2171.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, Senate File 2171 is a proposal that reflects redistricting of the Metropolitan Council districts. And I believe you should have in your folders the maps that show the new districts that are being proposed. This bill first went to elections, and we inserted the date that the map was printed to and posted to February 27th. This is a proposal that comes from Representative Freiberg and I, and me. That came out of a perplexing, if you will, situation for the city of Robbinsdale. In the last redistricting, Robbinsdale was put with its eastern suburb, the city of Minneapolis, and we found that to be very unproductive for our identity in Robbinsdale as part of the suburban core of our western suburbs. So this map makes that correction, if you will, at least from our point of view. No one objected to it. The what's happened also is the governor has made his appointments under the current law, and with just a few adjustments, and there is an amendment. Mr. Chairman, the governor's appointments to the Met Council districts can remain the same with some minor changes. Some of the members are new, but they won't have to go through a different process. And I don't believe that there has been any objection to the way in which the Metropolitan Council districts will be now shown, if you would be so kind to adopt the amendment that you have in front of you.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Yeah, we do have the A2 amendment. I believe I will have Senator Port offer the A2.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't have a copy of it, if you will.
No.
I guess I do now.
And then Mr. Greenfield will have just an oral adjustment to the A2 before. Actually, Senator Port will withdraw her motion on the A2. Mr. Greenfield will fix up the A2, and then Senator Port will offer the A2. Mr. Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. On page 1, line 11, this amendment is deleting, on the second instruction, a blank date reference, but the first engrossment of Senate file 2171 actually has the date that the map was posted on the website. So the oral amendment would just delete February 27 in place of the seven dots on line 1.3 of the A2. So the instruction would...
And that's because that reflects the changes that we're presenting today. And so the new map with the new Met Council members has been posted. We don't need to do anything more except if you folks would accept it.
So Senator Port will offer that amendment. And just for members and the public's reference, if you're looking at the maps in your packet or the handouts or online, we would be changing from the map labeled as 2023-1 to the map labeled 2023-2. So all in favor of that motion, of that amendment, the A2, as adjusted by Mr. Greenfield, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. All right. Mr. Shetnin, are you here to testify or just respond?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm here to thank you and the committee and Senator Rest, and appreciate moving this bill forward.
And just say your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Judd Shetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council.
Thank you. Anything further, members, or questions, or further amendments? All right. So Senator Port will move Senate File 2171 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you very much,
all
Mr.
Right.
Chairman and members.
Do we have Senator Champion? Is he on his way? Sure. All right.
Welcome back to the table, Senator Dibble. Here to present Senate File 2753.
So thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 2753 has to do with the subject of sustainable aviation fuels, otherwise known as SAF, which is how we'll probably refer to it through the duration of this hearing. I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank my co-authors, Senators Frenz, Klein, Kupek, and Jasinski. And the reason for this proposal, Madam Chair and members, is because aviation is a very difficult industry to decarbonize, and it will be some period of time from now until the time in which we are going to be able to electrify in this sector, unlike with automobiles and even heavier weight industrial land vehicles. Aviation probably won't be electrified for some period of time. So SAF is thought to be an opportunity to reduce aviation's carbon footprint sooner rather than waiting for that future. It is a technology that exists today, but the proposal here is to accelerate the development of more SAF and more SAF fuel and more access to SAF. A number of other places have started working on this problem. The Biden administration and Congress have made it a key component of their efforts to decarbonize in the aviation sector. And it is thought that this could be part of the portfolio of efforts to address our climate issues here in Minnesota, to ensure that all flights that take off from Minnesota have some blend of SAF fuel in them. And so there's an opportunity to do as some other states have started doing, which is provide an incentive to start sparking the SAF industry here in Minnesota. Very quickly, it's a fuel that would be blended into traditional jet fuel that would be generated from feedstocks and sustainable feedstocks. In this bill, in order to be considered as such, it would have to have a minimum of 50% carbon emission reduction over the life cycle of the fuel as compared to conventional jet fuel. Although it varies according to what we call the feedstock, the source of the SAF, sometimes it can have a reduction of even up to 80%. The industry and technology are still being developed, but some of the feedstocks that can be used for this purpose are cooking oil, solid waste from homes and businesses, paper, textile, food scraps, forestry waste, such as waste wood, and of course, we're familiar with the energy crops, which has always got a lot of interest here, you know, soy and others. So SAF is a drop-in fuel, is the expression, can be blended at up to 50% with traditional jet fuel under current technical requirements, and is expected that future technologies would allow for engines to be developed that could take even higher blends of SAF. So to the bill itself, it provides a refundable credit of $1.50 per gallon. And you'll notice in the bill that, of course, you know, the sky would be the limit if we didn't impose a limit. There is a blank appropriation on line 1.20, which should this bill move on, we would try to figure out where we would cap out the state's contribution to that end. It would also provide a sales tax exemption for the materials and supplies used for the construction, reconstruction, or improvement of a facility that produces or blends SAF, and it exempts SAF fuel from traditional the jet fuel tax. It includes a 10-year sunset for the tax credit. It's not intended to exist in perpetuity, but rather get the SAF industry launched and off the ground and have a market that's established in Minnesota. So I think I've probably said enough at this point. Mr. Davidman has some more information from Delta, who is very supportive of this initiative, and so if I could turn it over to Mr. Davidman to talk more about why this is such a great idea. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Mr. Davidman, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Jeff Davidman. I'm the Vice President of State and Local Government Affairs with Delta Airlines. I want to thank Senator Dibble for bringing forward this legislation, which is extremely important for Delta, the airline industry, as we try to decarbonize the airline industry, which in aviation, which is considered a very difficult industry to decarbonize. Delta has made a commitment to get to net zero by 2050. And although there are things that we can do on the ground, such as remove single-use plastics, which we're doing, such as electrifying the equipment that we have at MSP with our partners at the MAC, such as baggage carts or tugs that move the planes back and forth, that only gets at a small part of our footprint. 98% of our carbon footprint comes in the air. And the best tool that we have and the airline industry have at our disposal to reach our goal of getting to net zero is sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF. And it's not just Delta that's saying that. The United States 2021 Aviation Climate Action Plan highlights that SAF will be critical to the long-term decarbonization of aviation. The IPCC 6 assessment report that came out earlier this week, that some of you may have read, states that sustainable aviation fuel is important to the aviation sector to reduce CO2 emissions. As Senator Dibble said, in order for a fuel to be classified as SAF, it has to have a minimum 50% carbon emission reduction over the life cycle of the fuel when compared to conventional jet fuel. And some feedstocks can already result up to 80% greenhouse gas reduction. As Senator Dibble said, it is a drop-in fuel. It's pretty an amazing concept that even today we can take 50% SAF with 50% conventional jet and use it on the aircraft today, the way the airframes are already constructed, the way the engines are already constructed. We expect over time with technology that is only going to improve as well. The problem that this legislation is aimed at solving is that there's currently only 10 million gallons of SAF produced in the world annually. And to put that in perspective, that's not enough to run Delta's worldwide operation for even one day, or our operation MSP for even 3 weeks. 3 billion gallons of SAF is what's needed to meet the U.S. demand by 2030, with even more required in the years to follow. The other problem is that as the SAF industry gets developed, the product is currently 2 to 3 times more expensive than conventional jet fuel due to the initial investments and the R&D that's required. While the technology exists today and is evolving quickly, additional policy is needed in order to get SAF scaled to a level that it can have the desired impact. That's why President Biden, the DOT, and the Department of Energy unveiled the SAF Grand Challenge to create 3 billion gallons of SAF in the U.S. by 2030, and why Congress included tax incentives and grants in the Inflation Reduction Act last year. And as Senator Dibble said, states are also going to play a very important role in incentivizing the production and the use of SAF, and we're seeing that. In Illinois in January, they passed a similar tax credit as what is being proposed in Senator Dibble's legislation. In Washington State, there's also a similar tax credit that's already passed the Senate. It's currently sitting on the House floor for final action. And California has had a similar type of incentive in place for a number of years. Delta's goal is to make MSP, where we use approximately 270 million gallons of fuel every year, the first airport in our network in which we can say every airplane departing from MSP has SAF on board. We need this legislation that Senator Dibble is authoring in order to make SAF a reality in Minnesota and allow us to improve our carbon footprint in one of our largest and most important hubs. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Davidman.
And Madam Chair, I think I'm going to relinquish the table because there's a lot of testifiers, so if you just want to start calling folks up en masse, and I'll sit back here.
Next on my list, I have Tim Sexton, then Roy Fuhrman, and Peter Frosch. You can all head up there, and we'll move from one to the other. And if you can, try to keep your testimony as close to 2 minutes as possible. That would be helpful. Mr. Sexton, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Dibble, for authoring this bill and for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Tim Sexton, and I serve as an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. As you are aware, transportation is the number one source of carbon pollution in Minnesota. And in the U.S., commercial airplanes and large business jets emitted about 10% of emissions from the transportation sector and about 3% of total carbon pollution from all sources in 2019 before the pandemic. While our collective use of automobiles, production of electricity, and the industrial and agricultural sectors each exceed the climate change impact of commercial aviation, passenger air travel was producing the highest and fastest growth of individual emissions before the pandemic, despite a significant improvement in efficiency of aircraft and flight operations over the last 60 years. MnDOT has engaged with the public in, on strategies to decarbonizing on-road transportation since 2017, when we first adopted the state's carbon reduction goals for the transportation sector. We've heard from people and businesses across the state about different strategies and priorities to reduce carbon pollution from on-road transportation. This includes things like more efficient vehicles, lower carbon fuels, system operations, mode shifting, land use changes, and many others. And I bring that up because aviation is very different. I think we heard from Mr. Davidman already, but aviation is much harder to decarbonize, and there are fewer options to really significantly reduce carbon emissions. In fact, there's really only one, and that is lower carbon fuels. As mentioned also, that the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, has a climate action plan that talks about multiple strategies to decarbonize and reduce petroleum-based fuels from aviation, including electrification and sustainable liquid fuels. It's important to note that electrification has a lot of potential, especially for short distance flight in the coming decades. However, FAA does not expect electrification to be a solution for medium and long haul flights that generate most of the aviation sector's carbon emissions, at least not until after 2050. MnDOT has led and participated in multiple stakeholder processes where low carbon fuels emerged as stakeholder priorities, including most recently the Governor's Climate Action Framework that directs MnDOT to promote lower carbon biofuels as a strategy to reduce climate pollution from transportation. The FAA's Aviation Climate Action Plan concluded that well-designed economic incentives, including blenders tax credits and investment tax credits, can help bridge the cost gap between sustainable aviation fuel and petroleum jet. Related, the governor's budget includes funding to incentivize the production and use of sustainable aviation fuel in Minnesota, and MnDOT strongly supports state efforts to incentivize SAF in the state. We look forward to working with a bill author on the bill to support lower carbon transportation fuels in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sexton. Mr. Fearman, please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Transportation Committee, and especially to Senator Dibble for sponsoring this bill today. I'm Roy Furman, Chief Operating Officer for the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which owns and operates Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And as the owner and operator of one of the largest airport systems in the United States, the MAC supports the sustainable fuel initiatives as part of an important strategy to reduce aviation's environmental impacts. The MAC has a longstanding commitment to sustainability that is reflected in our 2030 sustainability goals focus to reduce airport greenhouse gas emissions by 80%, among other initiatives. While we're making significant strides to reduce emissions at MSP's facilities, improvements at the airport level can only address a portion of the aviation's broader impact. The airline industry is ready to begin transitioning to sustainable fuels. The federal government and airlines are aiming for aviation to be net zero by 2050, and Delta Airlines, MSP's largest carrier, has committed to sustainable aviation fuels, as Mr. Davidman testified earlier. Nationwide production, however, is currently very limited to 10 million gallons per year, in comparison with over the 300 million gallons of jet fuel that is used at MSP annually. This proposed legislation has the potential to position Minnesota as a national leader in the sustainable aviation fuels industry, creating a substantial opportunity for economic development. Minnesota and MSP, in partnership with Delta, can demonstrate the possibility of reduced airline emissions. But we need local fuel producers capable of meeting local and national demands. The MAC supports this legislation as a big step toward creating a local market that can address this national gap. Thank you for your time today, Madam Chair, and Senator Dibble for sponsoring this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Fearman. Mr. Frosch, you're next, and after him, I have Matt O'Mahony and Brendan Jordan, if you guys would make your way up to the table as well. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Frosch. I'm the President and CEO of the Greater MSP Partnership. It's my pleasure to speak with you about the economic opportunity Minnesota has now to take the lead in the race to create the nation's first sustainable aviation fuel hub. Greater MSP is the nonpartisan 501c3 economic development partnership for the 15-county Minneapolis-St. Paul region. We're 350 organizations, including businesses, universities, foundations, and nonprofits, all working together to grow this economy, create good jobs for everyone, and increase our economy's global competitiveness. Greater MSP is actively pursuing the development of a sustainable aviation fuel economy in Minnesota. We're exploring how it would be done and what the value would be of doing it. This effort is at an early stage, but it is moving quickly and it is building momentum. While there are dozens of big questions yet to be answered, the results from the initial analysis are clear and worth sharing today. The opportunity for Minnesota to build one of the world's first SAF industries is real. The economic benefits would be widespread and very significant, and this is an opportunity that is knocking on the door right now. You'll hear us use the terminology SAF and not the general term biofuel. I've come to understand in the past number of months that the solution for airlines cannot be a slight modification to the existing biofuels industry. SAF should be understood as a new industry where we would utilize the knowledge and experience we've gained from our biofuels industry. Both the airlines and federal government, as you have heard, are both committed to developing this new SAF industry. Building a new SAF economy will require billions of dollars of investment in new crops, new refineries, and new scientific research and technology, since producing low-carbon SAF at an industrial scale at an affordable price is a huge innovation challenge. Nearly all of this will be private capital drawn from around the U.S. and the world, but we will be able to leverage major federal resources in the Inflation Reduction Act, as Mr. Davidman noted. We can expect that a few hubs around the U.S. will be built for SAF research and production. Right now, Minnesota is positioned at the front of the line if we decide this is an opportunity we want, but there are also others pushing right behind us. A SAF hub in Minnesota means that we would grow the feedstocks here, refine them, blend the fuel, and fill the jets at the MSP airport with hundreds of millions of gallons each year. To create this value chain, Minnesota would also be a hub for the scientists, entrepreneurs, and investors needed to build this economy. The benefits to Minnesota of being a SAF hub would include thousands of jobs in construction, refining elsewhere, more income for Minnesota farmers, and more vitality for rural communities, and it would strengthen the demand for airlines to fly to MSP Airport, one of the state's most significant economic assets. I'm testifying today because this is more than a vision. The work is underway to create a plan for how to make this a reality, a plan to win one of the fastest growing industries of the 21st century for Minnesota, and win the way Minnesota has always won, by finding solutions to a global challenge that creates jobs for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frosch. Mr. O'Mahony, you're next. Brendan Jordan after that.
I think Mr. O'Mahony is just if there's questions.
Okay, you know, great.
Appreciate it.
Brendan Jordan, Kathleen Schuler, you can come up to the table as well, and Peter Wienius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brendan Jordan, VP of Transportation and Fuels at the Great Plains Institute and representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota, which is a broad-based partnership that supports the development of innovative bio-based industries. I will keep my remarks brief as I think that there have been some great testifiers, but just emphasizing again the urgent need to get Minnesota on track to move towards a decarbonized transportation system. The dearth of options for aviation decarbonization in particular, and really the essential nature of SAF as a decarbonization strategy for aviation. I think, you know, just the need for this as a climate strategy is very difficult to argue against. There just aren't a lot of other good options for aviation. We do see a huge economic opportunity with this industry as well. Emphasize again, there are new federal tax credits and investments that likely ensure that SAF investments will take place somewhere, but they do not ensure that those investments will take place in Minnesota. We are competing with other states. Illinois has just passed a similar tax credit, and we will see investment, both federal and private investment, follow state support and complementary policies. Although not insured by this bill, I do think a SAF market could support a lot of exciting innovation on the feedstock side. And one connection I would like to make for the record is the connection with the Forever Green Initiative and opportunities to produce cash cover crop oilseed crops that not only create a new source of oil-based feedstocks for the SAF industry, but benefit soil health and water quality. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Ms. Schuller, please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Kathleen Schuller. I'm Policy Director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. We do have some concerns with this bill. We heard that the IPCC just released their latest report, which concludes that we are approaching the 1.5 degrees Celsius global warming threshold, beyond which we will see climate disasters that will become so extreme that people will not be able to adapt. We have fundamentally altered air systems, resulting in a public health disaster, including more heat waves, famines, and infectious diseases, which could claim millions of additional lives. We need deep, rapid, and sustained greenhouse gas reductions. This means we need alternatives to fossil fuels and aviation. But this bill does not address the best alternatives. And Mr. Jordan referred to the second generation oil seeds, which I think need to be promoted. As you heard, decarbonizing aviation fuel will be challenging. Evidence shows that biofuels do not reduce tailpipe emissions, but could reduce greenhouse gases in the production phase of the life cycle if we use the right feedstocks. This bill could result in incentivizing the least effective biofeedstocks, such as corn ethanol, which increases water and air pollution. Instead of offering a tax credit, as this bill does, we should invest in better solutions, which include second-generation feedstocks. There was a paper from 2020 that reviewed all of the existing scientific literature on bioaviation fuels, and it concluded that first-generation feedstocks such as palm oil, corn, sugarcane, beets, and wheat will result in high water demand and increased fertilizer use, and this could cause more water and air pollution and are not likely to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. On the other hand, second-generation feedstocks, including more sustainably grown perennial oilseed crops such as rapeseed and camelina, as well as waste oil and forest residue, could produce greenhouse gas savings of 70 to 90%. So we suggest that Minnesota support policies and resources to create a reliable and efficient Minnesota-based supply chain for commercially viable second-generation feedstocks such as oilseed crops. And as short to medium term alternatives for aviation fuel. The right policies and investments will bring real benefits to our climate and health, and this bill is not necessarily the solution. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Schuller. Peter Wiginius, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Peter Wiginius, Legislative Director of Sierra Club. We strongly concur with the concerns you just heard from Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate and that were also raised in the letter you received from CURE. In particular, groundwater, which is drinking water for many Minnesotans, has been widely contaminated as a result of ethanol production. The proposed GREET standard included in this bill doesn't include externalities like water pollution. Minnesota taxpayers are now paying to treat the polluted municipal well water systems to make it drinkable. It's helpful to contrast this bill with Senator Dibble's other bill to implement a low-carbon fuel standard. While there's disagreement about water pollution and others there, at the core of that bill is a recognition that the biofuels industry needs to be pushed to reduce over time, to ramp down their emissions to zero, pushed to do what they've been saying they're going to do, switch away from corn ethanol to the less polluting crops you just heard about. But in this bill, there is no phased reduction to zero and no lessening of water pollution. It's just more ethanol. A recent University of Wisconsin study says that using ethanol is 24% worse for carbon emissions than just using gasoline. The best quality of this bill is that it's targeted to reduce pollution from the aviation sector. The question is, do they need a taxpayer subsidy for that? That brings us to the second contrast with a low-carbon fuel standard approach. In that approach, the polluter pays. Here, it is the taxpayer. With limited state dollars to reduce climate emissions, that is not the most effective or needed use. There are so many ways that Minnesota families need help to reduce their emissions and their energy bills. We must invest to help with air sealing and insulation, upgrading electrical panels, switching out gas appliances to electric in homes all across Minnesota, training the next generation of electricians to perform those transitions, retrofitting small businesses and public buildings, not to mention transit, biking, and walking. In conclusion, this is a massive undertaking. a mobilization which has been compared to World War II. And we know that Senator Dibble and others support those investments. But we are nowhere near the scale of what is needed to help Minnesota families. Until we have brought those investments to the scale needed, Delta and United should redirect their profits to incentivize the fuels they need to address their emissions. Subsidies should be reserved for citizens. For these reasons, Sierra Club asks you to prioritize other investments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Reginius. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to testify to this bill? Senator Dibble, do you have other comments? I have a couple of questions.
No, I'm. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm ready to respond to questions. Actually, I would like to respond. I will say I appreciated the testimony of Ms. Schuler and Mr. Wagenius. Palm oil is actually named as a prohibited source, so there's one tiny response to one aspect of the testimony, but I appreciate their critique and appreciate their testimony. Thank you.
Well, I have just a few thoughts and question. I sort of agree with what Mr. Wagenius was saying at the end, that taxpayers are already paying the burden of the cost that we have for climate change and the cost of climate change in our communities. So I'm a little hesitant to move this direction with sort of subsidizing the exact causes of what have caused pollution. So I think we have maybe some work to do there. But I guess one of the biggest questions I had was on page three in 3.21, it talks about carbon capture and storage being able to be part of the sort of way you buy down what the climate impact is. Can you talk about, or maybe one of your testifiers, can you talk about, like, if we become a hub for this in Minnesota, what happens to that carbon that we capture? Where does it go? What is it used for? What happens to it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill does admittedly need some more refinements. I think Mr. Frosch indicated there's still a lot of questions to be answered. This is probably one of them. If one were to look at my clean transportation standard bill, carbon capture and storage would be sequestered. It would be required to be sequestered and never used for any other purpose. I think your question implies, would it be piped outside of the state and then used to extract fossil fuels in nearby states, namely North Dakota? I would not support that idea.
Okay, that would, as this moves forward, I do trust you to continue having these conversations, so I would definitely want that part tightened up and make sure that we are requiring it to be sequestered. Senator McEwen has a question for us virtually. Senator McEwen.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, and all the testifiers for this information. The idea of the bill, the concept is, I find kind of exciting, actually. My concerns, though, are, I guess I share the concerns of the testifiers we heard from Ms. Schuler and Mr. Wagenius, and also in the letter that we have, and in particular, the point that was just brought up by Madam Chair, chairing right now in regard to the carbon capture and how that would go. I share that concern. But I also wanted to just note, Senator Dibble, that I am concerned about the measuring of those externalities. That is something that really caught my attention in the letter that was submitted. As we know, we've heard in different committees that I'm on in the Senate, just how dire the situation is with our water in Minnesota, of all places. And so I really think the externalities of this type, the production of this fuel, have to be taken into account and measured in a way that is transparent and that we can really see the cost benefit. of what this would look like. So I'll look forward to following this bill as well. I don't so much have a question as just also concur that that while I find the concept exciting and I hope that we're able to get to a place where this is possible, I have some real deep concerns about this. And so I look forward to following the bill and seeing how it develops. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. And I'll echo her and say that I love this idea. I want us to get where this is workable. I do have some questions, but I know you've said you're committed to continue to work with us as it moves through the process. I will say we were just named the best airport in the country again, and I think we could be the airport that's leading on decarbonizing and really stand out, and I look forward to working with you on that. Do you have comments to close us out?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your comments. Thank you, Senator McEwen, for your comments. I did want to respond to Ms. Schuler's point that if we are going to focus, sustainable aviation fuel, as we described, could come from a number of sources. A lot of the conversation really turns on if this is going to come from energy crops. And of course, there's been, a lot of articulated concern around biodiesel and corn ethanol as we understand it. But the emerging oilseed crops, a lot of the research, which of course is occurring at the University of Minnesota, I was one of the authors of the Forever Green Initiative in years past, is really exciting. And that would be my goal, would be to really emphasize the opportunity that's available from the emerging evidence that we have of the oilseed crops and all of the associated collateral benefits that they imply. And so as we refine our approach to this idea, I'm excited, like you are, that we could bring the carbon footprint down in the aviation sector, shy of electrifying airplanes. Not going to happen very soon. I'm getting on an airplane tomorrow morning. It chagrins me to think that I'm going to be contributing. I do buy carbon offsets, for the record, but I do. I'm going to be contributing to fairly substantial carbon output in going to California and back in one day, and I'd like to feel better about that and feel better about myself in so doing. There is work to be done. Still some time in this session, but we'll see. This does need to make a stop off in taxes. I think in any case, it's a late bill, so it'll probably be captured by rules if the committee sees fit to support it, to move it on to its next stop. And so there's some time to have some of these conversations yet. And we're committed to further refinement. And I know that all the stakeholders are as well. So I can make a motion if there's nothing further.
If you have a motion,
Senator
Champion
please. Is here. I know he's anxious to get to his bill. Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 2753 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Your bill is passed and referred to taxes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Champion. We'll get you started while the chair retakes his seat.
No problem. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And this is going to be really quick and right down to the point because I have to also run over to judiciary.
I will say, Senator Champion, you reminded me yesterday to ask all the questions.
Oh, no, Madam Chair. So Senate File 2983, there's a need for a deputy registrar and a full-service sort of full-service operation in North Minneapolis. And state law says that no more than two in a city or within 10 miles. So we need a statutory exemption. That's what this does. And it's more convenient for Northsiders and others in order to be able to go and get their licenses and just other things, tabs, whatever it is. At a site over at 1001 Plymouth Avenue North. And with me, I have the commissioner, who is Commissioner Irene Fernando, along with Patrick Early, who is only here in order to answer any technical questions. So if we can go to the commissioner, that'd be great.
Commissioner, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Madam Chair, Senators, thanks for the opportunity to speak on Senate File 2983. And, of course, thank you to President Champion and Representative Gabaje for their leadership. I'm Commissioner Irene Fernando. I use she, her pronouns and represent Hennepin District 2, which includes Plymouth, Medicine Lake, Golden Valley, St. Anthony Village, and Minneapolis. I'm the first Filipino-American elected in Minnesota. I'm the youngest woman to serve on the Hennepin County Board. And I'm the first person of color to serve as board chair since Hennepin's founding in 1852. I'm dedicated to advancing equity by advocating for those who are marginalized or structurally disenfranchised, and I'm proud to call North Minneapolis home, where this bill would make immense change in accessibility. North Minneapolis has been historically and systematically disinvested in, so it is unacceptable for the North Side to not have the same level of service center as the rest of the county. Hennepin County operates 7 service centers throughout the county. 6 of the 7 are full service operations that can complete all motor vehicle transactions, driver's license applications, and vital records processing, such as getting copies of birth or death certificates. However, 1 of the 7, the Northside Service Center, is a limited deputy registrar's office. This means the already overly marginalized residents in North Minneapolis have to go to one place to get their driver's license, only to have to go to a different location to get license plates or tabs for that vehicle. Many Northside residents are also transit dependent, so going to more than one location is either not feasible or outwardly perpetuates disparities. Hennepin supports this bill to make the Northside Service Center a one-stop shop for residents in this part of the county and to ensure all 7 Hennepin centers can deliver the same level of service. Please invest in Northsiders, President Champion, and my neighbors with the care and resources that we deserve and have earned. Chair members, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We appreciate your testimony. Members, are there questions? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is a fiscal note, but as I understand, the resources can be and will be absorbed by the agency or the fund or however that works. I don't know if Ms. Boyd can articulate it better than I can.
Ms. Boyd?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members, there is a brief fiscal note, and it just outlines that there will be programming costs to the department, and then costs of initial and ongoing inventory for the new office, plate, stickers, title stock, things like that, and then some staff time. But this would all be absorbed, especially the inventory, that the office would be treated like any other deputy registrar, and those costs are assumed.
And Madam Chair, the other analysis, of course, is, you know, how many other deputy registrars are there within a 10-mile radius? There are a number of them, but they're all public. There's one private, but it's quite a ways away, so I don't think it really has an effect on this. They're all public offices, so this is a good step to take. So with that, Madam Chair, we can refer Senate File 2983 to the floor, so I'll make that motion.
Senator Dibble moves Senate File 2983 to the floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
I'm so used to saying aye. I said aye. I'm sorry.
Senator Champion, the committee concurs with you, and your bill is on the way to the floor.
Thank you so much. I got to run. Love you guys.
Right. Senator Dibble, do you have comments, updates for our next meeting?
So we are not meeting Monday, members, and next time we will see you will be a walkthrough of the budget proposal. And that will be on Wednesday.
With no other business in front of us, we are adjourned.
Same bat time, same bat channel. All
right. We'll see you on
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Wednesday. Right. Word.